of Econ Dynamics, which is in Brisbane, in the state of Queensland, in Australia. Griffith is also one of the three universities in this, three Australian universities in this collaboration. I'm a physicist, not a philosopher, but today I'm going to try my hand at talking about a philosophical problem. It is, in particular, a problem on the philosophy of decision theory, but it also has some important consequences for philosophy of science more generally, and particularly for some debates about things like causation. From a physics perspective, though, it's also interesting as an example of how foundations of quantum mechanics can lead to some insights into other areas. And also maybe as an exercise, I think it's interesting as an exercise into trying to think explicitly and formally about the role of an agent within a theory. And decision theory is, of course, the obvious place to try to do that. And particularly this interesting, intriguing problem. So what's the Newcomb problem? It is the following. There are two boxes in front of you. One is open, and there's $1,000, you can see. The other one's closed, and has either $1,000,000 or zero. You have two choices, you're given two choices. You can either just pick box one, or you can pick both boxes. But there's a catch. There's a predictor who has already put $1,000,000 in the box, if and only if she predicted that you were going to pick just box one. And you happen to be fairly confident in this predictor, at least that's the assumption of the problem. So your probability, the conditional probability, your degree of belief that there will be $1,000,000 in the box, given that you choose box one, is much larger than that probability if you choose box two. So of course, the first solution, if you just use classical Bayesian decision theory, which in this context is often referred to as evidential decision theory, so I use that terminology, you just maximize expected conditional utility. And in this particular scenario, well, here the U's are the utilities of a pair of outcomes in action. In this particular scenario, then, considering as a minor assumption that the values and the utilities of what's in the box is just the money values, which is a minor assumption, you can just put other money values if that's not valid for you. Then, considering the main assumption of the problem, that the probability, conditional probability of $1,000,000, given that you pick A1, is much larger than otherwise, you should check just one box. But soon after that, there's another argument that comes to mind. The two boxes are in front of you. The closed box, it's there, right? There's either $1,000,000 or there's nothing. Whatever you do now, that's not going to change. The content of the box is not going to change. So you might as well just take both boxes and have an extra $1,000. Of course, one could criticize this as saying that, well, this principle of dominance is not an independent principle. It's just a shortcut that you would use if there's no probabilistic dependence between the actions and the outcomes. But the response in this particular case is that this principle can be used when the choices cannot causally influence the outcomes. And for Robert Nozick, which is the philosopher who first published this problem, and by the way, it's called Newcomb's problem because it was proposed to him by a physicist called William Newcomb. For him, it displayed a paradox for rationality. Both solutions have equal support, and even people who take either solution as being preferred can have intuitions varying depending on the contents of the boxes. So the intuition behind the dominance argument is formalized in what is called a causal decision theory. And it's a popular position in the foundations of decision theory at the moment. And this one says that you should replace the conditional probabilities in the utility argument by causal probabilities, or counterfactual probabilities under a causal reading, or probabilities of counterfactuals, if you understand those counterfactuals as causal. So the conditional probabilities there could be understood as being, say, the probability that your action A will cause an event O. So in that particular case, in the Newcomb problem, the probability that that your choice will cause the $1 million to be in the box is the same, independent of your choice. So you should take those box, both boxes, according to causal decision theory. Now, these causal probabilities, they can be understood more formally as an unconditional average over what Lewis called dependency hypothesis, and Skirms called causal propensities. These are denoted by a set of variables, usually called k. And note that there's a difference between the formulation of the causal probabilities and what you just get, the normal probability theory, that these causal propensity, these causal factors, they are taken to be independent from the choices. So the important thing to stress then is that for causal decision theory, there are two kinds of probabilities. There is the usual evidential subjective conditional probabilities, and there is these causal probabilities, which play the role of their effective probabilities. Because in a decision situation, causal decision theory says you should use the causal probabilities. You might even ask then, what does the first probabilities mean after all if they have no practical influence in the behavior of the agents? But I won't pursue that kind of argument. The important thing to stress then is that in a Newcomb problem, or you can't formulate a Newcomb type problem whenever these two probabilities differ. And maybe to give a, to be not be unfair with the causal decision theories, I'll introduce a kind of problem which is taken to provide most support for that position. And that's the so-called medical Newcomb problems. We are sort of invited to imagine that there is a popular example is this one. We imagine there is a gene which causes lung cancer and also causes someone to smoke or to prefer smoking, perhaps, or to undesire smoking. So that smoking doesn't cause lung cancer. It's just a spurious correlation caused by this gene. So if you like smoking, therefore you should not stop smoking by fear of getting lung cancer. At least that's what causal decision theory would tell you. And the causal decision theory would then argue that evidential decision theory or usual Bayesian decision theory, by not taking into account these common causes, would advise you to not smoke, even if you would otherwise prefer to smoke. That sounds a very far-fetched kind of scenario, so I was very surprised the other day of finding out that there is something like that, actually. Although in this case, it seemed like, if they're right, that these genes can decrease the chance of lung cancer, so it would be actually bad for the causal decision theory, I suppose. But I think even for that kind of problem, there is a good enough defense for evidential decision theory. And it is this. The action of this gene could only be through the agent's beliefs and desires. And to the extent that the agent is well aware of their own beliefs and desires, the knowledge of those would screen off any correlation between their genes and the chance that they will get cancer, given they decide to smoke or not. So if a rational agent just take into account all of that evidence, even Bayesian decision theory would still advise them to smoke. There are other more sophisticated versions of this argument by Hughes and by Hugh Price. But they essentially argue that the causal probabilities and the evidential probabilities do not, in fact, after all, come apart, at least in cases like the medical Newcomb problems. So it would be just an irrelevant complication. It's not even wrong. So, but these defenses are not general enough, right? it would be interesting to imagine, what if in some cases they do after all come about? Which one is right? So to, before I give my my new example, I'll think a bit more about what causal decision theory ought to say. And they need an account of what is inside and outside the causal influence of an agent. That, of course, is going to depend on the causal theory, or the theory about the causal structure of the world that the agent holds, or the dependency hypothesis, as Kearns calls it. Relativity, for example, which is our best theory of causal structure, would say that anything that's outside the future light cone of an action is outside the causal influence of their action. So, but regardless of which theory you're going to use, we could represent by lowercase b any factors which are outside the agent's causal influence, given the best theories about the causal structure. And therefore, the probability of these events would be independent of the actions of the agent. I think I'm missing a prime on one of the equations there. And represented by lowercase a, any effects that are inside the agent's causal influence, therefore, the joint probability of events inside or outside the agent's causal influence would factorize, given the knowledge of a complete and sufficient specification of these causal factors, k. So therefore, when the decision situation depends on both events inside and outside the agent's causal influence, the causal probabilities would have that form. It would be factorized in that way. After the parallel with Bell's theorem, one of the assumptions the two main assumptions that go into the derivation of a Bell inequality, the assumption of what is often called free will, or perhaps you could call free conditionalization or no retrocausality. And there is the assumption that the hidden variables do not depend on the choices of experiments being performed in these two space-like separated regions. The assumption of local causality is that exactly that the joint probabilities for the events in these space-like separated regions factorize, given a sufficient specification of hidden variables in the past of these events. And therefore, a general local hidden variable model for the joint probabilities of these events would have that factorized form. And that's precisely the same as we would have for a causal probability, except that I didn't take into account the possibility that the events B have can be influenced by a second agent. But you could introduce that as well. Now, as you all know, Bell showed in 1964 that no local hidden variable model like that can explain the correlations predicted by quantum mechanics between certain internal pattern of particles. And what's more, since the 80s, we know that, in fact, actual real experiments that these days can be done in many labs around the world do violate these Bell inequalities. Quantum mechanics is accurate. One way of thinking about that, which is probably familiar to those of you who know about Bell inequalities, is that the set of local hidden variable probabilities, the set of probabilities which can be modeled by a local hidden variable model, they live in a convex polytope, which is a bit like a figure like that for those who don't know this terminology. It's just a geometrical figure, which is the convex combination of a finite set of points. But in general, it's going to be in a larger dimensional space. And all probabilities which are given by a local hidden variable model are constrained to lie inside these convex polytope. But the quantum probabilities can be outside. But a causal decision theorist, which is constrained to use causal probabilities. We'll be constrained to have their probabilities, their effective probabilities, inside the polytope, no matter what evidence they acquire. So we can even make a little game. So just for illustration, imagine that you have Alice. She's in a game show, and there's a little box in front of her with two buttons, a red and a green button, and two lights. And she can press the buttons, and one of the lights goes off. Which light goes off seems to be random, depending on, doesn't depend on which button she presses. Bob also has a similar box. And he tells Alice that he's gonna press his buttons at random. And simultaneously with Alice, therefore in a space-like separated region. So Alice is invited to choose a sequence of buttons to press, and Bob will do the same. And they will take note of the correlations between the labels on these light bulbs. They do that for a large enough number of runs so that they get these correlations, and they use these little magic formula. And the game is the following. If Alice chooses to play, and if these quantity is larger than 2.8, she wins $1 million. If it's less, she loses. But she can decide just not to play and just take home an easy $1,000, risk-free. Suppose Alice uses causal decision theory. What should she do? She should use causal probabilities. And then they would be given by a factorizable model like that. And for each pair of Alice's and Bob's choices, they would be factorized in this way. And as you probably know, that's just the CHS-station equality, and it's bounded by 2 for a local univariable model. But quantum mechanics predicts that it can go up to 2 root 2, which is approximately 2.83. So that causal decision theory would say that she should take $1,000, but evidential decision theory would advise her to play the game. Now, Lewis, who is one of the proponents of causal decision theory, had this quote about the Newcomb problem. They have their millions and we have our thousands. They think this goes to show the error of our ways, but we have no choice. The riches are reserved for the irrational. Now, it's, at least in the original problem, it's a comfortable situation to say something like that, because he was not forced to put his money where his mouth is. But at least in this case, I suppose the causal decision theory would have some trouble at least in justifying why they would why would they bet on the violation of Bell inequalities. There's some possible objections now that one can make. First, that the game is not exactly analogous to the original problem. It's not, I admit, but causal decision theory should apply to any decision problem, not just to the original Newcomb problem. And the important thing about a Newcomb type problem is that it is this disagreement between the causal and the evidential probabilities. And the advantage of this particular game is that you can actually do it. Another one is that the money in the boxes, one could say, in the Newcomb, original Newcomb problem, is actually known by someone. But hidden variables in quantum mechanics are hidden even in principle. So suppose in the original problem, there's a friend of mine who's looking at the closed box. Surely he would advise me to take both boxes. First, nothing in causal decision theory says that these causal factors must be known by anyone. The gene, for example, in that medical Newcomb problem is not known by anyone. And your friend would advise you to take the two boxes no matter what's in the closed box. So he doesn't give you any information by saying that. And the choices of an agent should depend only on her information, not on someone else's. And I think this objection really reveals the fragility of the original problem, not of my argument. And it is this with the following. What makes the Tickle defenses work is that they argue that those cases, the medical Newcomb problems, are, in effect, cases of communicated prediction. Suppose you see me walking to a table in which there is coffee and tea. I love coffee and I hate tea. You can predict with 100% certainty that I'm going to take coffee. But if you tell me that, Eric, you're going to take coffee, I might just take tea just to prove you wrong. And furthermore, you know that. you can know that if you try to communicate a prediction, it's not going to work, but if you keep it to yourself, it probably will. So in general, a prediction cannot be communicated, it needs to be kept accurate. And in this particular scenario, what guarantees that it can be accurate is that you can represent an accessible living principle. Another objection is that the argument seems to depend on a kind of superdeterministic interpretation of the bell correlations. And what if we believe in non-local causality? Well, first, there isn't really no generally accepted explanation of the bell correlations. Right? The only thing we all agree on is that quantum mechanics gives you the right subjective probabilities, if anything. So if you are a causal decision theorist, why don't you get your causal probabilities from relativity, which is our best theory of causal structure? Why would you get it from quantum mechanics? Why don't you just take quantum mechanics to be giving you just the subjective probabilities and not all the evidential probabilities, if you want, not the causal probabilities? It can't be because it doesn't give you the right answers, because the causal probabilities don't have to agree with your observations. And furthermore, all that is required is that this possible superdeterministic interpretation is a logically possible explanation of what's going on. So if the causal decision theorist gives any non-zero weight to that possibility, and he should, even because it agrees with relativity, if anything, then the argument still holds. I'll skip this one because I probably don't have time. And I'll just finalize with some possible lessons for physics now. First, maybe perhaps the defenses from the causal decision theory camp might lead to some new understandings about Bell's theorem, maybe new kinds of loopholes in trying to think of this analogy. I'm skeptical of that, though. I think one interesting lesson is that perhaps we haven't been giving enough attention to the no retrocausality or no free will or the free will assumption in the version of Bell inequalities, which plays a central role in this particular problem, but not much in discussions about Bell's theorem. Although in this conference, apparently, there's a few people who are interested in thinking of models for quantum mechanics in which that assumption is relaxed. So that might be an interesting possibility, especially because you can save local causality and therefore agreement with the spirit of relativity, not just the letter. And maybe another interesting possibility might be that thinking about these kinds of problems may help in this program of searching for information theoretic principles for quantum mechanics. If we take quantum mechanics to be a theory about information and where information is subjective degrees of belief, then perhaps we should take it seriously and say that it really is a theory about, and therefore if an agent is an important, if subjective degrees of belief held by an agent, then perhaps we should be serious about it and say that quantum mechanics is perhaps a theory about decisions and not just about informations. And maybe thinking about these kinds of problems, especially given this interesting analogy, might give some intuitions about how to proceed in that direction. Thank you.
Dick Schaub, I like that you've made a distinction between the classical Newcomb's paradox and the quantum case, but I think perhaps in the original Newcomb's paradox, the lack of any resolution to it is due to the fact that there's basically a causal loop being set up by the fact of the prediction. If the prediction has any validity whatsoever, it's as if the God knows what the outcome's going to be and influences the situation prior to the outcome. And it's exactly like a memory element, which is a self-confirming loop. And so either initial condition, either the money's in the box and he chooses it, or the money's not in the box and chooses both, are consistent. And you don't have that in the quantum case. You have either a random choice, if you believe in quantum measurement being totally random, or you have a forwards and backwards in time, like a zigzag EPR relationship. So I guess I'm asking, does this make sense, or do you
agree at all? I'm not sure I understand your objection. One thing that I was careful to stress is that the problem is not exactly analogous to the original Newcomb problem. I'm just trying to argue against causal decision theory, not trying to solve the particular instance of the original Newcomb problem. And so the important thing is that there is a case in which causal probabilities should give a distinct prescription from the evidential probabilities. And I think that's one of those cases. So it's not entirely relevant that it is not analogous to all details to the original Newcomb problem.
Okay. Well, I like this talk, and I think you've successfully argued against a certain position.
Yeah.
But I think the target you hit isn't quite the target as advertised. And so I think what you're raising is not problems for causal decision theory per se, mm-hmm. but problems for causal decision theory plus an added constraint on the dependency hypotheses, namely the constraint that conditional on the past light cone, the probabilities are independent. Mm-hmm. And that is something that every causal decision theorist that I know would disavow, but still call right. themselves causal decision theorists. Now, you might say, well, okay, well, look, if they're not independent on the conditional on the past light cone, then don't call them causal probabilities. Fine, then they'll just go over the terminology dependency hypotheses. And certainly, we should get our dependency hypotheses from whatever physical theory we have reason to take seriously. So when I talk about causal decision theorists that I know, I'm including Brian Skirms, Bill Harper, James Joyce. So none of these people, though even though they call themselves causal decision theorists, are committed to what you attribute to them, namely their constraint to have the causal probabilities in the local hidden variable polytope.
Right. But would you say that they have to have some account of what are the events which are inside or outside the causal influence of an action? They have to have some account of that, because they have to say that they need to use the probabilities which can cause the outcome to happen. So they need to tell
right.
what are the events
so
which
we,
can
I mean,
cause.
Have, yeah.
Otherwise, you might as well say that, say, the money in the box, I can cause the money in the box to be there or not. Why not? Because you have a theory that the money's already there, it's in the past.
Well, we do, and we look to our, we look to our physics for it.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. Our physics says that choice that Alice makes over here doesn't affect probabilities of an outcome over there, but our physics doesn't say that probabilities of outcomes experiments over here are independent of probabilities
right.
outcome over there. So yes, we look yeah. to our physics for what sorts of dependency hypotheses we take seriously. But
I think I understand the question. So what I'm saying is that not that you necessarily need to well, of course, if you believe in non-locality, that's one way of getting out of the problem. What I'm saying is that imagine historically that you are for the first time meeting quantum mechanics, and you're meeting validations of Bellman qualities. Your best theory so far is the theory that you cannot influence what's outside your space, what's outside your future light cone, right? So you would use something like that. And now you go and you find that, oh, there are these strange correlations. And perhaps one explanation is that there is some kind of non-locality. But another possible logical explanation, not saying necessarily that that I believe it or that necessarily should be, but if you give any non-zero probability to the possible explanation, that the whole thing is deterministic, and perhaps your choices of experiments are also caused or somehow correlated with the hidden variables which determine the outcome of the experiment, then you should still hold the same kind of causal probabilities. And if you give any non-zero probability to that hypothesis, you don't need to believe it 100%. Any non-zero probability to give that hypothesis will make your causal probabilities differ from the exponential probabilities and the argument still holds. And furthermore, we don't really have a full understanding of what is behind, what is the causal structure behind quantum mechanics. And that's really the main point. If we had, perhaps you could be, you couldn't give a zero probability to that hypothesis, but you don't.
Make some announcement about tonight. Okay. Well, let's thank all the speakers from this afternoon.